Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 3 weeks to Election Day, and the Republican nominee says that it might not be a fair and clean vote, calling the race rigged against him because of the media and because of voter fraud. Election experts say there's no truth to his claims, and concern is growing that even the suggestion this is happening could be a threat to democracy and the nation's cohesion after the election. This hour on Point, Trump says rigged and what that means for our democracy. You can join us on air or online. Do you think this election is being rigged against Donald Trump? Do you think Trump's rhetoric is dangerous? Joining me first from Washington is Julie Pace, White House correspondent for the Associated Press. She's been all over this campaign since this started. Julie, nice to have you with us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So Donald Trump has spent this last week and weekend tweeting, talking about the election being rigged. Yesterday he tweeted, quote, "Of course, there is large-scale voter fraud happening on and before Election Day." Trump says his opponents are, quote, "on the verge of maybe perpetrating one of the greatest frauds in voter history." Here he is at a rally in West Palm Beach, Florida last week. Donald Trump saying the nation is about to lose its democracy to special interest groups.
"This election will determine whether we're a free nation or whether we have only the illusion of democracy, but are in fact controlled by a small handful of global special interests rigging the system, and our system is rigged."
Julie Pace, Trump has brought this up before, but with 3 weeks to go in this election, why is he making this a theme in the final stretch?
I think there are two reasons that he's really pushing this. One is that if Trump hopes to actually win the White House, he basically has to hope that turnout is low. So he has to look for ways to turn off voters, hope that they don't show up. And one of the ways that you can do that is to disgust voters with what you're saying and also make people fearful that if they go to the polls that there could be worst-case scenario violence, maybe best-case scenario some voter intimidation. And then the other reason is Trump is someone who has spent decades in the public eye building this idea of Trump as a winner. That's his entire brand. And if he loses this election, he'll be deemed a loser on the biggest stage possible. And so he has to try to find a way to preserve the idea that even if he loses the election, he's still a winner. And one way that you could do that is to essentially find someone else to blame. Never make it about what he did in the campaign or what he didn't do, but to make this about something else. And a rigged system seems to be the something else that he's pointing to right now.
Donald Trump is putting GOP leaders and election officials in a tough spot, trying to refute these claims of a rigged system. Here's Mike Pence, his running mate, telling NBC's Chuck Todd on Meet the Press on Sunday morning that they would concede if they lose the election.
"We will absolutely accept the results of the election. Look, the American people will speak in an election that will culminate on November the 8th. But the American people are tired of the obvious bias in the national media. That's where the sense of a rigged election goes here."
Sounds like different messages from the top of the ticket, Julie Pace.
Yeah, and we've been hearing that a lot, actually, some different messages from Trump and Pence. I think that what you're hearing from Pence and what you hear from other Republican leaders is something that is generally just accepted in our presidential elections. It doesn't even need to be said, which is the idea that the results will be accepted, that the winner will winner will be declared the winner by the will of the voters, and the loser will step aside. And every time that you have Mike Pence or other senior people in Trump's orbit making these claims, Trump follows up by saying, "Look, I really do think that the system is rigged and that the vote is going to be rigged." And until we hear from Trump himself, I think in the next couple days, perhaps in the debate, that he will 100% accept these results, I think it's an open question what he would do if he does come out the loser on November 8th.
So the Center for Public Integrity came out with a report that says journalist donors favor Clinton over Trump by more than an 8-to-1 margin. I wanted to play this on Monday. Trump's campaign manager Kellyanne Conway telling CNN's Jason Carroll that the campaign's frustration lies more with the media, not necessarily with voter fraud.
If there's compelling evidence of voter fraud, obviously, as early voting goes on...
But there hasn't been any evidence of that.
No, I didn't say that. I said if there is, that certainly we would take action. But in the meantime, it's very frustrating every day to just see that we can't get complete coverage of the race.
So this study from the Center of Public Integrity kind of plays into Trump's argument that the media is against him, does it not?
I think that the Trump campaign is certainly trying to use it to bolster that argument. If you do look at the study, I think what you find is that virtually none of the people who are listed in there are journalists that are covering this campaign. Plenty of news organizations, including my own, have very strict rules against donating to any campaign, not just presidential campaigns. And I think you find that to be more the norm than what you find in that study. And to the point that Kellyanne Conway and other Trump officials are making, I think that really glosses over so much of the coverage that Trump has gotten in this campaign. He, more than any other candidate that I can remember in recent memory, has had plenty of access to news coverage. His rallies, in many cases, have been broadcast in their entirety, which, if you're a candidate, is actually the best way to get out your message uninterrupted and unfiltered. So this is something that is relatively new for the Trump campaign, and it's also something that is part of Republican playbooks in the past. It's not unusual to see Republicans candidates bashing the media. It gets a lot of their base voters really worked up. And the other thing I would just say is that we are covering things that Trump himself is saying in so many of these cases. If Donald Trump woke up every morning and decided to tweet about healthcare policy or his plan for defeating the Islamic State, maybe he would get different coverage than if he was waking up in the morning and tweeting about women who have accused him of sexual assault or the election being rigged.
Here's Donald Trump at a campaign rally in Pennsylvania on Monday, telling a group of voters that in addition to casting their vote, they should be on the lookout for specific groups of voters who he claims may cheat on Election Day, though he didn't say who they were.
We have an election coming up on November 8th. So important that you get out and vote. So important that you watch other communities, because we don't want this election stolen from us.
Julie Pace, what is Trump doing or suggesting to his supporters that they should do at the polls on Election Day?
Well, it seems like Trump is suggesting that his voters should be in other communities, as he says, Democratic communities, which tend to be more diverse, younger in some cases, and be on the lookout for voter fraud. Now, the thing about voter fraud is, A, it doesn't happen in big numbers. If you look at studies of actual voter fraud on election days, the numbers are incredibly low. Two, it's unclear what the signs of voter fraud would be that Trump is looking for. And I think, to my original point, what he's trying to do is scare off people who are inclined to vote for the Democratic candidate. And this specifically would be African-Americans, Hispanics, young voters who could feel like if they go to the polls, they're going to be intimidated or worse, there's going to be some kind of violence. And he wants to keep them away. So he's being he's shadowing his words a bit. But I think it's very clear to his supporters and to Democratic voters what he's saying here.
Lastly, before you go, Julie Pace, what about the stories of Trump TV? Reports this week that Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has been talking about setting up a Trump television network after the election. What is the significance of a Trump TV, a branded media outlet like that Trump would use should he lose this election?
It's really fascinating. There have been rumors of this for several months now. And basically, the idea is that if Trump loses the election, he has really stirred up a lot of support from a sizable segment of Americans, and that he would look for a way to harness that energy, not in a political sphere, but in a media context. If you look at people that he has surrounded himself with, he definitely has people with a lot of media experience. His son-in-law is one of them. And there's nothing concrete at this point. There's no evidence that there is a plan that is definitely moving forward, but it certainly has been part of the discussion that what Trump is doing now could be all about gaining energy for an eventual media venture, not an actual presidency.
Julie Pace, White House correspondent for the Associated Press. Thanks so much, Julie. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Joining me now from New York is Wendy Weiser, director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. She looks at issues of voting rights and elections. Wendy Weiser, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So this notion that this election is rigged is becoming a staple of Donald Trump's stump speeches and his Twitter feed. You study this. Is Trump onto something, or what is the actual likelihood that this election is rigged?
You know, this has been a really unfortunate rhetoric, and I think it's been very thoroughly and widely debunked. It's true that there are things that we can and should be doing to improve the integrity of our elections, but insinuations of fraud, widespread fraud, rigged outcomes are completely unfounded, and study after study has shown that we just don't have that kind of fraud in this country, that you are more likely to be struck by lightning than to identify a case of in-person voter fraud. There was a very widely cited study in the Washington Post by Loyola Law Professor Justin Levitt looking at a comprehensive study of all instances of impersonation voter fraud from 2000 to 2014, found only 31 possible credible cases out of more than a billion votes cast. So this is really a red herring. And this kind of heated rhetoric is just otherwise undermining faith in our democracy, and it's harmful.
So there is a perception out there, however, that there is a problem. 73% of Republicans think the election could be stolen from Trump. That comes from a Politico recent polling. There is an idea out there, a thought out there, or concern out there that voters are losing confidence, at least, in the process.
You know, and that's a real threat to our democracy. Our democracy works because people have confidence in its legitimacy, and it is unfortunately easy to shake that confidence. It is not something that should be casually and baselessly tossed aside. And there are even other negative outcomes from this kind of rhetoric. It's now being used as a rallying cry to try to mobilize people to actually try to police polling places that could really disrupt the elections and lead to other problems and intimidation. It could undermine the election process. It could and create a lot of lines and other problems in elections.
We'll talk more about this after the break. Wendy Weiser, stick with us. We're talking about Donald Trump's claims that the election is rigged. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking this hour about the integrity of our election process as Donald Trump claims the election is rigged. You can join the conversation. What does it mean to you that the nominee of a major party is saying that the election is rigged against him? What does that mean for the country after Election Day? Last night at a rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin, Donald Trump continued to allege that there will be voter fraud in this year's election.
They even want to try to rig the election at the polling booths. And believe me, there's a lot going on. Do you ever hear these people? They say there's nothing going on. People that have died 10 years ago are still voting. Illegal immigrants are voting.
And by the way, allegations of votes being cast using the names of deceased voters and by illegal immigrants has not been substantiated. Wendy Weiser is with us from New York. She's the director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center at New York University. Talk about that, Wendy. These allegations that there is widespread fraud. Is there evidence of systemic voter fraud anywhere in this country?
Absolutely not. And what we've seen, actually, is a series of court cases over the last couple of months that have come down, courts from all across the country that have looked closely at allegations that there is a risk of fraud in states across the country. And every single one of them has found that, in fact, there is little to no fraud in any of the states. We do have strong protections against that. In Texas, for example, a federal appeals court found that there were only two instances of voter fraud over millions and millions of votes cast from 2000 through 2011, two instances altogether. So it's really an incredibly rare occurrence, and it's something that when it does occur, it's certainly something that we should take very seriously, and it's not something that we should allow in our elections. But it's easy to blow that up and to try to use that to generate controversy, unfortunately, this is not an entirely new phenomenon. And part of how we got here is there have been, over a number of years, efforts to drum up fears of voter fraud as a way of justifying new laws that have cut back on voting access. And courts are now pulling back. Many courts have found that these laws were passed with the express purpose of disadvantaging certain voters, especially minority voters, and surgically targeting methods of voting that African Americans or Latinos are more likely to use. But they were justified through this kind of rhetoric. It has just now reached a fever pitch and an extreme that we hadn't seen before.
So here is Trump advisor and former mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani, on CNN on Sunday, making reference to unsubstantiated claims of votes being cast using the names of dead people.
I'm sorry, dead people generally vote for Democrats rather than Republicans.
Wendy Weiser, what are the larger implications here? A major party nominee making claims that undercut the essence of American democracy, encouraging voters not to accept the results of an American election.
This is really a very novel, uncharted territory. This is a degree of casting doubt on our democracy by a major party candidate that we have not seen in our history. And I think this could be incredibly harmful. Again, as I mentioned before, democracy depends on public confidence in its legitimacy and the legitimacy of the outcomes. That's how we have peaceful transition of power. That's how we have rule of law. Without that, it is... democracy does not work. And so it is a dangerous state of affairs. And also, this kind of rhetoric can be used to turn citizens against one another, to justify efforts to keep people from participating in the political process. And we've seen that now over the last year. These kinds of rhetoric and justifications have been used principally to keep people from participating. It is not uncommon for this kind of rhetoric to be used by a candidate who is losing to perhaps cast doubt on the outcome. But this has been this is just a degree of pushback to the legitimacy of the process that we haven't seen before.
Wendy Weiser, stand by. Let me bring another voice into this conversation. Joining me from Stanford, California, is Nathan Persily, professor and constitutional law expert at Stanford's Law School. He served as the senior research director for the Presidential Commission on Election Administration, set up after the 2012 election. His piece in The Washington Post is headlined, "Americans Are Losing Faith in Democracy and Each Other." You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Nate Persily, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I will ask you what I asked Wendy. I mean, delegitimizing the federal government, the results of an election. What do you make of this?
Well, I think it's important that you sort of look at the multifaceted claim of illegitimacy that Donald Trump is lodging here, because it's not just the electoral system, it's the government in general. So while he talks about voter fraud and the like, he's also talking about a conspiracy with the media. He even said global banking conspiracy. So it's a broadside, not just against the process of participation, which, as Wendy said, is particularly damaging in its effect on participation. But it's also the legitimacy of the government in general.
In previous close presidential elections, the losing candidate graciously concedes for the good of the country, they say. Here's Al Gore in 2000 after the U.S. Supreme Court called an end to a vote recount in Florida. Gore conceded the closely contested presidential election to Republican George W. Bush, something that's almost always been the norm in American elections.
Now the U.S. Supreme Court has spoken. Let there be no doubt. While I strongly disagree with the court's decision, I accept it. I accept the finality of this outcome, which will be ratified next Monday in the Electoral College. And tonight, for the sake of our unity as a people and the strength of our democracy, I offer my concession.
So, Nate Persily, the encouragement, it seems now, of huge swaths of Americans to view Hillary Clinton, should she be elected, as somewhat of an illegitimate president. Is that fair? I mean, what's the effect on the next president who takes over?
Well, in our survey, we found that maybe a third of Trump supporters would not take the election of Hillary Clinton to be legitimate, and roughly 20% of Hillary Clinton supporters wouldn't accept Donald Trump as a legitimate candidate. So these are troubling statistics. And so this is the kind of data that you see in developing countries when, you know, democracies are unstable and the like. And so it does undercut the legitimacy of the eventual leader. It casts doubt on the sort of consent of the governed for particular policies that leader will be enacting. But let me also say that this is not particularly new right now. I mean, we've seen this over the last 8 years, if not more, because, for example, the whole birther movement was an attempt to discredit the legitimacy of President Obama. And so we've had a series of events in the last 20 or so years that have led us to this point.
Let's get John in here from Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. I am very nervous, getting increasingly nervous about what I'm seeing on social media, and as people discuss how they're going to respond to a possible Hillary win, and wondering where the line is when you are talking to voters, telling them that the election is rigged, that it's not going to be a true election, and that they should do something about it. We have heard Trump suggest things like this. We've heard other Republican leaders, like the governor of Kentucky, mm-hmm. say that maybe violence would be needed to rectify a fraudulent election. When does this become sedition, the actual inciting of people to political violence?
Nate Persily, would you respond to John? Thanks so much, John, for the call.
Sure. Well, that we have a sort of specific constitutional test for, which is that you've heard of the notion of clear and present danger. This is not going to be incitement in the classic sense. I mean, you've really got to have sort of the situation of shouting fire in a crowded theater, that there really has to be proximity to the. If you were outside a polling place and you said, "All right, let's do something violent," then that, of course, would be incitement. Let me also say that we should not exaggerate the likelihood of this. I mean, we have to sort of play both sides. I mean, I don't think we should be contributing to the environment in which people think it's likely that there's going to be violence in polling places. Yes, there are these are troubling calls that the candidate is making here, but at the same time, this is not going to be like a vote system in Iraq or wherever else where people should be afraid to go to the polls.
Here's Joe in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the program. Wendy, hold on. We'll get you in a second. Joe, go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for letting me share.
You're welcome.
Yes, I'm very intrigued by the word democracy and the effort and the interest in trying to save it. And yet I'm looking and listening to what Hillary is speaking about with open borders and her constant ability to skirt around the law as what's been coming out in these emails. And I'm further absolutely very frustrated over her desire to get into the Catholic Church and to reshape the American Catholic Church to get the people to vote a certain way. I mean, there's no end to what this woman will do or what her machine is capable of.
And so are you supporting Donald Trump, Joe?
As of right now, I'm leaning in his favor. I'm also considering some of the other less or independent or other nominees. But the outcome from this thing is this month there was a new convention of states down in Williamsburg, a first ever. Mm-hmm. And so when the federal government or the people in charge go to such an extreme as what we're seeing, there's naturally going to be a consequence, whether it's Donald winning or him not winning and Hillary, say, winning. There's going to be a correction. The way the system is set up right now, it's not fair, and there's a great number of people frustrated.
Got it, Joe. Thank you. Wendy Weiser, jump in here. A lot of people feel that way. You know, the system is rigged. It's not fair, and I'm getting the brunt of it.
Well, the
differences of policy and disagreeing with what a candidate stands for and what a candidate is trying to do is exactly what we should be talking about in an election process, not with the process of the election. So it's not that the vote is rigged. It's that there are differences, really big differences, between the candidates that people should be duking out at the polls. And I did want to underscore something that Professor Persley said, which is that people should not be afraid or worried about going to the polling places. One of the silver linings of all of this advanced rhetoric drumming up folks to go do poll watching activities, that election officials are actually getting prepared. We're seeing them put out guidance explaining what is and isn't allowed in the polling places. Poll workers are being trained. Nonpartisan observers and Department of Justice are standing ready. So there is going to be a lot of people on the job to preserve order and to ensure that the voting process works properly. And if you see something and if something's not going right, there are people there that can help you. You can call 866-OUR-VOTE. So this is not something that people should be worried about on election day.
Nate Persily, you found in your research that many people who favor Donald Trump, who support him, have a wider distrust that goes beyond politics, beyond political institutions. Tell us what you found.
Well, that's right. Part of this sense of illegitimacy or lack of trust in government extends beyond just the electoral process, and it goes to the core of people's trust in not just government, but institutions and even each other. And so what we're seeing in the United States is that all kinds of institutions have lost, people have lost trust in them. So whether you're talking about the media or the church or corporations, banks and the like, we're seeing these institutions at historic lows. And that sense of alienation extends beyond just relationship of people with government and institutions, but even the likelihood that they're going to trust each other. And so this notion of social trust is really a bedrock of democracy, so that you have to believe in other people to make good choices in their voting.
It's not just a sense of alienation, though, that you found, right, Professor Persley? You talk about one of the hallmarks of faith in democracy is a willingness of the defeated to accept the results of elections. And you say that this election campaign is tied to a deterioration of the values that support American democracy. Talk about the values that you mean.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think that, as I said before, that we find a sizable share of the voting population is unwilling to grant legitimacy if their candidate would not be the winner. So that about a third of Trump supporters, but also close to 20% of Hillary Clinton supporters, would not consider their opponent as having won in a legitimate way. And so there's real concern that whoever ends up winning will not be seen as the legitimate leader of the country. And this is, as I was saying before, something like that we see in other countries where elections get boycotted, where the election is not seen as a final decision, but as just one continuing step in assessing the legitimacy of the leader.
Yesterday, Vice President Joe Biden was on NPR on All Things Considered, and host Robert Siegel asked him if the country is too divided to have any kind of effective leadership. Here's Biden's response.
The election will determine that, but I think not. I think when we appeal to the better angels of Americans, we've always succeeded. Trump is out there doing something very dangerous.
Wendy Weiser, what do you think?
Well, we've had a really polarized state of affairs, not just in Washington, but in states across the country for some time now. This, again, is not a totally new phenomenon. We're just seeing it crystallized right now in a very sharp way. So we have sort of a broader trends and broader problems that we need to address with our democracy right now as well.
Let's get Arnold here in Plattsburgh, New York. Hi, Arnold. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Allow me to put an international spin on this topic.
Okay.
There's an Alpine democracy which, for historical reasons, since the Second World War, has been very, very scrupulous about its electoral system. I'm referring to Austria. In June, they had a presidential election. Of course, it's a symbolic post mm-hmm. between a left-wing and a right-wing candidate. After the voting count was finished, the right-wing party, which lost, claimed that there were voting irregularities. So what they did was they went to the Constitutional Court, which is the equivalent of our Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court in June ruled effectively that for the first time in post-war Austrian democratic history, there were irregularities and voting fraud in the procedure.
Mm.
Hence, they had a second election, which is being held in October, to rectify the situation.
Mm.
My point is that in well-established Western democracies, there is electoral fraud, and it can happen anywhere.
Arnold, thanks so much for the call. We're discussing the implications for democracy with Donald Trump's ongoing claims that the election is rigged against him, and you can join us. Have you lost faith in our democracy and the institutions that make it run? I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned, fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about Donald Trump's claims that the election is rigged and what that means for confidence in the U.S. voting system. You can join the conversation. Do you think at the end of the day that whomever loses the election will gracefully concede, should concede? Is the foundation of our democracy about to be shattered? Wendy Weiser is with us from New York. She's the director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. And from Stanford, Professor Nate Persily is with us, constitutional law professor and election expert there at Stanford University. Here's Donald Trump urging his supporters in the swing state of Pennsylvania to watch their polling places because he says Democrats will cheat. Here he is at a rally in Altoona.
Go down to certain areas and watch and study and make sure other people don't come in and vote five times. If you do that, we're not going to lose. The only way we can lose, in my opinion, I really mean this, Pennsylvania, is if cheating goes on. I really believe it.
I want to get to this, Wendy Weiser and Professor Persily, Donald Trump suggesting his voters go to polling places and watch. But I wanted to get, Wendy Weiser, your response to Arnold's assertion, our caller before the break, the assertion of voter fraud in Austria, voting irregularities there. I'm reading here from the BBC that their highest court ruled that the election rules had been broken in a way that could have influenced the result, but they said there was no proof that the count had been manipulated. Wendy Weiser, can you speak to that? Such a large claim, I wanted to get you to respond.
Well, I'm not sure that I can speak to the Austria case. I'm not familiar with that. But there have been cases of electoral fraud in U.S. history. Almost always they involve election insiders, election officials, poll workers, doing things akin to ballot box stuffing, manipulating the vote that way, not by individual voters showing up at the polls and trying to commit fraud that way. That kind of fraud doesn't happen. We've put a lot of protections in place, so even the other kind of election fraud is incredibly rare. But that is the kind of fraud that has been found in the past to occasionally interfere with the integrity of elections. And we have had incidents in some localities, really very rare over in our history, where votes of elections have been redone as a result of that.
Can I jump in here?
Yes,
I just
please, Professor.
To say one thing,
uh-huh.
Two things. First of all, that I'm glad he brought up the Austrian example, because one of the things we're seeing is that this is not a unique phenomenon to the United States. That and the phenomenon I'm describing is a casting of illegitimacy on the democracy. So the rise of fascist parties in Europe that we're seeing right now is also tied to this sense that the governments are illegitimate and ill-prepared to deal with contemporary problems there. It keys in not just to the issue of, again, voter fraud, but also to concerns about, you know, democratic performance. This type of, I mean, because as I was emphasizing before, Donald Trump is not just saying that the election is illegitimate, although he is saying that. He's talking about the system, whether it's the media, banking, mm-hmm. and the like, and mm-hmm. you see that in Europe as well. Secondly, let me agree with what Wendy was saying, which is that it's not just that vote fraud is this kind of broadside that describes many different phenomena at once. And so on the one hand, this notion that you're going to have hordes of people going from polling place, impersonating other people is a terrible, not only does it not happen, but if you think about it, it is a terrible way to throw an election, right? And so that's why that doesn't happen, because, you know, widespread voter fraud like that is very detectable and is not terribly efficient. Where you do see the shenanigans is, again, insiders, as Wendy suggested, as well as you do see examples of voter fraud through absentee and mail ballots. And that's an area where we've had sort of increased regulation and concern, where through the mail that you sometimes will get people filling out other ballots and the like.
Like in Florida, where a federal judge just ruled that county election officials must notify voters if their signatures on a vote by mail ballot and the voter registration forms don't match. I guess there was an issue with this in 2012. So that's new this time around. So you talk about voter fraud, Professor Persily. What about voter intimidation? We heard Trump there coming out of the break urging supporters to go to certain areas, watch and study, and make sure other people don't come in and vote five times. He's also urged supporters to be, you know, physically present at the polls, monitor the polls. A lot of people are calling this voter intimidation. What constitutes voter intimidation, and is there a way to prevent it?
Well, if you obstruct the process of voting, you are committing a felony. And so if people actually prevent people from going in and voting, they're interfering with their civil rights. And so that, you know, standing around and looking at people is not going to be enough. If there is some kind of actual intimidation and preventing people from voting, then that's the problem.
Let's get Jeremy in here. Jeremy in Racine, Wisconsin. Hi, Jeremy. Welcome to the program.
Ron from Elton, Wisconsin.
Oh, hi, Ron. Sorry about that. Go ahead. You're on the air.
You know, you bet there's concern about the process. During the primaries, all these caucus states had the citizen vote was going on. But what would happen is the Democratic National Committee never released those true citizen vote counts. Instead, they just said Clinton won this state, Bernie won this state. You know, and then this is compounded by the media keep repeating that Clinton's insurmountable lead in the popular vote, so it really doesn't matter how Bernie's doing. You know, the media has never really checked into what the true popular vote was during the primary process. And then it's again compounded when the email leaks come out that, oh, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democratic Party are complicit in this slander against Bernie. You know, your commentators are totally right. It might not be right. The fraud might not be at the polling place. It might be in the whole system at large.
All right, Ron.
A lot of pressure on that Democratic committee.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Wendy Weiser.
Can I jump in?
Professor. I was just going to ask, you know, how do you improve the integrity and, more importantly, the perception of the integrity when it comes to these things, right?
Well, I'm glad you had that caller chime in, because it does reflect a larger and bipartisan concern about the system. And while we've been focusing on Donald Trump and his supporters, it is true that, you know, you had a lot of rhetoric earlier on in this campaign about how the system is rigged, right? And it wasn't just about the types of things that Donald Trump is talking about. And so Bernie Sanders supporters certainly felt that the Democratic primary was rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton, both because of the what was happening behind the scenes with the DNC, but also just concerns about, you know, bias and whether it's superdelegates or the like. So it's on the one hand, you know, this notion of rigged elections suggests something that's not transparent, but it's also sometimes things that people know about, so that they look at the primary process and how we choose candidates, as well as the campaign finance system, and they sort of have a broadside against it, saying, well, this system is unfair, it's rigged, and it's illegitimate.
Wendy Weiser, jump in here. I want to play this this piece of sound. Here's a new ad for Hillary Clinton. Josh Charles, who played lawyer Will Gardner on CBS's The Good Wife, is appearing in this new ad, urging lawyers and law students to get people eligible to vote and to join the Hillary for America Victory Council. Here's a bit of that ad.
Many states have changed their laws to make it harder for certain groups to vote this year. So this November, we need your help to make sure all eligible voters can cast a ballot. And that's why I'm asking you to join the Hillary for America Victory Council, so you can do important work like staffing voter protection hotlines, and serving as a poll observer, or providing snacks for celebrities like me.
They're not going to do that.
Okay.
So, Wendy Weiser, have many states changed their laws to make it harder for certain groups to vote?
We have actually seen an unprecedented, well, not unprecedented, but in the last real century, wave of laws over the last 5 or so years that have been designed to make it harder to vote since 2010. Now we have 20 states with new laws in place that make the voting process harder. In 14 states, we're going to see new restrictions on voting in place for the first time this year. These are moving targets because courts keep ruling, sometimes striking down some of these new laws. So we see a lot of confusion. The laws have been going back and forth. There's been a lot of change. So I think that there's a lot of merit to efforts to try to create hotlines and provide information for voters so that they can know and plan in advance and have someone to ask, what are the rules and requirements to vote in my state on election day? There's confusion by the fact that we really don't have one national election. We have 50 or more, likely 9,000 different elections, because our elections are run locally. They're pursuant to state laws in all 50 states, and then there are procedures that, you know, can even vary in our thousands and thousands of local election jurisdictions. So that could create some kind of confusion for voters, too. It should not, but there is a lot of information, both by political parties and by nonpartisan sources, that are now available for people to easily look up and find out what they need to do to vote.
Professor Persily, from Twitter, we have a question from Chris, who asks, why not focus on electronic voting machines when every 4 years we hear about malfunctions and security issues? I mean, it's a good point. What about cyber threats to the voting process? What about hacking? I mean, the Russians have had their fingers in this election already. Are any voting machines connected to the internet? What about these voting machines?
So that's a good question. And in our survey, we asked how concerned Americans were with foreign intervention and hacking in the electoral system. We find that 70% of Americans are really concerned about that. And it doesn't differ between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton supporters. And so that's another area where you could talk about riggedness, but it's not the type that Trump is talking about. One of the interesting things about the U.S. electoral system is that, to some extent, our decentralization and our clunkiness is also a protection against this kind of hacking, so that you have, you know, over 8,000 jurisdictions that are managing our elections. And so it's extremely difficult in a systematic way to mess with the technology. Now, there are some areas where you have electronic voting machines, and even more disturbing, that ones that don't have a paper trail associated with them, mm-hmm. so you can actually see the vote. But none, to my knowledge, are actually connected to the internet. And I, you know, as the research director of the Presidential Commission, we didn't see that as a problem. There's some talk in the future that maybe we would have more connectivity with the internet, but right now that's not really the issue. If people are concerned about electronic voting machines, it would really be sort of individual machines that would get tampered with. And that's also something that could have happened with all kinds of other machines as well.
Strong listener response on both sides here. From Facebook, Eleanor says, Trump is brainwashing his supporters. If there was a way to rig elections, it would be impossible to do it in every state. Bill says attempts at rigging are a strong possibility. Let's go to Gary in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. Hi, Gary. Glad you called. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. I called just because I'm concerned about what might happen in the future. In Pennsylvania, we did feel, or many people that I know felt, that the elections were rigged even when Obama was elected 8 years ago. And I think there's a concern in Pennsylvania that it might happen again. And I think the people need to be united. They need to feel like, no, it's never going to, there is no such thing as a rigged election. And how can we make sure that happens, or what can we do so people don't feel that way?
Wendy Weiser, why don't you take that? Gary, thanks for the call.
That's a great question, and it's how to restore confidence after there's been a lot of shaking of people's confidence. We're starting to see the seeds of a pushback. We've seen election officials across the country are stepping up and saying, no, our elections are not rigged. We do a good job here. And actually, members of both political parties are also pushing back on this rhetoric. And hopefully that's a continuing trend, that we start to see a chorus going in the same direction, that perhaps all of this this monster of a good voter fraud allegations has gotten out of hand, and it's time to put that back in the bottle. I did want to add something about the hacking, and just to agree with what Professor Priestley said, and to add one additional thing. There have been attempted intrusions into state election systems. They've been into the voter registration system, so the systems that are connected to the Internet. They haven't actually been tampered with that anyone's detected, not to the voting machines. As Professor Priestley said, those should not be connected to the Internet, and those are not networked either in the same way. So to the extent that people are concerned, and they should be concerned, that we should be upgrading our technology. We actually have, in 42 of our states, we have used voting machines that are more than 10 years old. The problem is not going to be some ability to widespread hack. The problem would be more likely to be breakdowns. And as we upgrade those machines, we should upgrade our security features.
Professor Priestley, jump in here for our last moments. How do you see this rhetoric, the rhetoric about the rigged system, about the media, about global banking, about voter fraud, about all of this? How do you see that affecting the state of things after this election?
Well, I think that those who believe that there is a larger conspiracy either within the election or in the democracy are unlikely to take the results of this election as a referendum on anything. And so as we say in the article, democracy does sort of rely on the confidence of those who lose a particular election to live to fight another day. And what really does concern me is that people are not looking at elections that way, as a referendum on policy. What could sort of erase some of these concerns about vote fraud in this election and illegitimacy would be a huge victory. But if this is a close election, then every little thing about it will be scrutinized, and it'll be no surprise if there's a lot of people who think that it was illegitimate.
And in your extensive research, do Americans express any optimism that our divisions can be bridged?
No. In fact, what we saw is about 80% of Americans say that we are more divided than ever before, and most of those people say that these divisions will last far into the future.
Wendy Weiser, it can't be good news for any of us.
No, there are some bright spots. There are some issues that people do agree on. People do agree on, for example, the need to upgrade and beef up our election security measures, so get new machines, upgrade our voter registration security. People do agree on the need to reform money in politics. That's also a big piece of what's driving people's belief that the system is rigged against them. So there are perhaps areas where we can get together and work on our democracy together.
Well, 3 weeks and counting. I'm going to jump in. The clock's against me. Wendy Weiser, thanks so much for being with us. Nate Persily, Stanford Law School. Really appreciate your wonderful insights. Listeners, continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.